There you go.
I mean, and this is, you know, people talking.
Meanwhile, the sun shines and the wind blows, and you're going to, by the way, I got to share this with you because it was shared with me last night, Albert, and you're going to, you sitting down?
I am sitting, sir.
This out of Canada, which, you know, a lot of us are fond of thinking is sane.
Not lately. Got some crazy pills up there lately.
Yeah, this comes from CBC News. Opponents of wind farms are hailing Health Canada's decision to study the possible connection between noise generated by the towering turbines and adverse health effects reported by people living close to wind farm installations. Federal Health Minister Leona Aglukkaq announced Tuesday that Ottawa will conduct the study, which is in response to questions from residents living near wind farms about possible health effects of low-frequency noise generated by wind turbines. I don't know. You reckon those health effects are anything like having your baby poisoned in the womb by mountaintop removal, the filth and toxins? Yeah. Because I'm guessing there are no toxins coming off the wind turbines.
Brother Bob, I want them to do the best, most thorough study they're possible.
And then tell them to shut the up.
Yeah, but they don't even need to break out their passports, Brother Bob. They could just go west a little bit, hit Alberta, and check out the tar sands and do a little study on, just a little study.
You know what? That's interesting. There is no link here. You know how at the bottom of news stories that you might also be interested in, and there'll be links. There's no link here to 1.8 million dollar study focusing on residents living near tar sands. No, $1.8 million study will initially focus on residents in 2,000 dwellings near 8 to 12 wind turbine installations. Sherry Lang is CEO of North American Platform Against Wind Power, NAPAW. And she's encouraged. She says, I hope it will be independent and at an arm's length.
How can you be?
Because she's mad because, you know, she's one of these NIMBY freaks who doesn't, you know, who not in my backyard. You know, hey, Sherry Lang, you know what? I bet if you asked nicely, Bo Webb would let you move in underneath a mountaintop removal installation for a year or so. And then you wouldn't make it a week, Sherry Lang, before you were running crying back to the wind farm.
That's what I mean. They need perspective. They have no perspective. There's none. There's none. I mean, listen, I have a couple now, right? They built them. They just erected them. There's only two. But they're close enough. You know, I mean, I could see them. You know, they're beautiful and big. And it's just like, to me, I see that, and it's just, And anyone I think with, you know, in the Horn family, I'm sure, who sees a wind farm goes, or sees a windmill itself, just goes, And there's something cool about it, and then there's, I mean, the noise? Move! I live there! Shut up! Get out of here! We're gonna sit here and destroy everything, the air and the water and everything else, because you don't like looking at it?
Yeah, anybody want to do some research? Find out how much oil money went into windconcernsontario.org or NAPAW. Find out how much oil money went into that. Several hundred people from Ontario and the eastern U.S. held a rally in Toronto in April against wind turbine expansion in the province, citing rising energy costs and health risks. Huh?
Health risks. You could put one of those in my backyard. You could have my house like a lighthouse attached to it. I'd be fine with it. I'd get over
Come
it.
Come on down, Sherry Lang. Come on down,
yeah.
NIMBYs. Come on down.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll move you right in at Whitesville.
Yeah.
We'll blast right next to you every day.
Yep.
You can breathe the cancer-causing chemicals with every breath you take. When you take a bath, you can bathe in the entire heavy metal spectrum of the periodic table of the elements. And then you can sit down and tell us how wind turbines are bad for humans. And then you can hand us the disclosure forms, and we can see how much money you've gotten from the American Petroleum Institute. Won't that be fun?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, but there's debate. There's debate. There's a debate. Yeah, there's a debate. So now we have to talk about it, because there's a debate. Because two people versus 2 billion.
Sherry Lang is pissed off, but meanwhile, 3,795 West Virginians die has excess deaths per year because of mountaintop removal.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Bastards. I wonder how much money from the coal industry has gone into the coffers of windconcernsontario.org or NAPA, please.
How much money we'd have to pay her. All right, Brother Bob.
Got a roll here. Have a wonderful weekend, brother.
You too. Stay good. Stay good. Be good, Brother Bob.
Gonna try. Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. A couple of blinking lights that we hope are still blinking lights here. Ron cleared this up for us. White people and pools. The inside scoop on white folks and their weird obsession with single-race pools is this. People of color have water-soluble cooties. Don't want to get any of those on you. Next thing you know, you're out there and you've quit doing the minuet and learn right. Wanting justice and stuff. Man. And all because you went swimming with that, you know, where handicapped people get in the water. Or people of color, or you know, anybody who doesn't wear Dacron polyester blend checkered pants. Right. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob. How are you?
Hey, what's happening?
Well, not much. It was great to hear that live howdy tonight.
Oh, I tell you.
You know, when I was a little younger, I would hear howdy from a guy with a West Virginia accent followed by a couple of left jabs, but that's teenage stuff, you know?
Well, yeah. No, thank you. Thank you very kindly, Bill. It's good to hear from you.
Man, you really had it. I'll just start off with, I know what the company did up here, the power company. I had friends who were good linemen who were older fellas, and they bought them out early, replaced them with younger guys, and when they have problems, they got to call in from all over the area, from neighboring states.
Right.
They don't have enough workers. Cost money. And where you are, it's pretty wild yet down there in parts. Through the mountains and the trees and...
Yeah, there's some pretty hard... And there are photographs out there that are absolutely stunning. You know, the great big gigantic metal transmission towers?
Yeah.
They're not just down. It's not like they got knocked over. It's not like Godzilla knocked them over. It's like Godzilla stepped on them. They're squashed flat onto the ground.
Holy Christ. Oof.
Oddly enough, the wind turbines are standing straight and tall.
God. Because they're designed to do something with the wind.
Right. Yeah, 80 mile an hour wind, that's not even a snack.
Well, I always said that we'd never have decent priced or clean electrical power until they can figure out how to charge it for it by the month. That's the whole secret there.
Right. It's kind of like the argument that's made about why isn't cannabis legal? Well, it's because Big Pharma and Big Tobacco haven't figured out a way to patent it.
Yeah, exactly. And knock the little guy out of business that produces it.
I mean, that's one of the things that scares me about cannabis legalization. If it ever happens, it will be because some tobacco company or some pharmaceutical company has figured a way to genetically modify it.
Yep.
And
I have a bad attitude about what, you know, what it was in the 60s and this crossbreeding of it to where you knock you on your keister. It wasn't supposed to do that. You weren't supposed to trip on it.
God, I think the first reference I ever saw to it, and I didn't understand what it was as a teenager reading On the Road by Jack Kerouac, where he refers to it as T-E-A, just like, you know.
Yep, tea. Texas tea, I heard it called, and, you know, it wasn't. Well, tea, ganja, gauge, reefer, And I bragged that I'm a second generation because my old man, who'd be over 100 if he was alive, he was arrested with a pound of this stuff in 46.
Yeah, that could be real trouble in 1946.
Well, luckily for my dad, his brother, my good uncle, worked for a fellow who ran the Sicilian Benevolent Association, and a $1,000 bribe to a judge, no more trouble. We know corruption is new, but never happened before. The founding fathers about corruption? Are you kidding me? Right. That's why Lincoln had to send Simon Cameron to be ambassador to the court of the Tsar because he was the first Secretary of War, and he was buying such crap for the Union Army they had to get rid of him.
You know, there's a great piece, and it's hilarious, but it's very telling as well. There's a great piece by Mark Twain called The Facts in the Great Beef Contract. And it's the story of a man who entered into a contract with the Union Army and the federal government to provide barrels of beef for the Union Army, and his desperate attempt to get through what was then seen as a hopeless maze of bureaucracy to get paid. I won't ruin it. It's fiction. It's not fact. But I imagine somewhere along the way, Sam Clemens probably heard some story about that,
yep.
and did with it what Sam Clemens did with things. It's brilliant. It's hilarious, and won't take long. And it's easily found online. The Facts in the Great Beef Contract.
I've got to find it. I imagine that somebody in Julius Caesar's Legion were bitching about the quality of the wooden part of a spear, you know.
You say that jestingly, but it's absolutely the truth. During one of the major reforms that was enacted under the consul and general Gaius Marius.
Yeah.
He was a real live, honest to God soldier before he was ever a consul. And the Romans had taken a couple of, and I think it was at Arausio, perhaps, they took a righteous ass thumping. And part of the problem was that up until then, the legion would march off to war with these really nice spears, which they would then throw at the enemy.
Yeah.
Which the enemy would then pick up and throw back.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Germans experienced the same thing in the First World War with poison gas.
Yeah, the wind.
The wind picks it up and blows it back in your own people's face.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Allied powers were not quite smart enough to realize, hey, the wind will do that to us, too. So, let's get us some poison gas. Well, Marius was a little smarter than that, Bill. He got tired of seeing his own soldiers getting killed with their own spears, and sat down and designed, the spear was called a pilum, P-I-L-U-M. Several of them were pila. And he sat down and redesigned the Roman pilum so that when you threw it and it hit something, the head would break off from the shaft. And then presumably after the Romans won, they would go and they would collect all the spearheads and collect the shafts, maybe, and then all you had to do was manufacture the little breakable piece. Genius, right?
Yes, they were plenty good at what they did, no doubt about that. But you guys, you and Albert get going on stuff, and yeah, this is going to be a bad corn crop this year anyway, from what I hear already, because of this heat.
Well, what Ben Birch was saying to me the other day, Bill, was to watch beef prices fall because of early beef being sent early to the slaughter, and then watch it go through the roof next year.
Yeah, they've got to match it up somewhere. They got to make it back up all the time. And you guys, I mean, there's just so many things. I just finished a book, WPA. It was called American Made, A History of the WPA, by a guy named Nick Taylor. And what broke me up was here, they were trying, you know, they had writers, they had people doing everything for a buck to work, to make some money. And here were the rip-pig-lickers standing on the sidelines. They're leaning on their shovels. They're communists, the writers. They had some complaint about people, but these idiots couldn't provide work for anybody. But if the government provided a guy with a woman, they had women who were seamstresses, they were getting cotton, excess cotton, and these seamstresses were getting paid to make mattresses to give to poor kids' families.
Yeah.
And they didn't like that either. It's like these bastards never change.
No, they don't. They want it all.
Yeah.
And they never stop wanting it all. The only thing that defines them is their avarice.
Yeah.
And I define avarice as being a notch above simple greed.
Yeah.
Avarice is greed with an extra something more than a soupçon of just plain old fashioned pig eyed mean.
It's like, how much do you need to, I was doing pretty well. My second wife was making a buck, and I was salting it away because I knew the music business real well. This can end tomorrow. competition, change in musical taste, the crowd gets older, and, you know, you're done.
Yeah.
I never went for the big time. I didn't want to live out of a bus and travel all over the country to, you know, the hell.
Hey, I got to share something with you, Bill. I got this from Reverbo a couple of days ago. If you put it into a search engine, you'll probably find it. It's a video by a rather competent guitar player.
Okay.
Takes about 12 minutes, and it's called The History of Rock and Roll in 100 Licks in a Single Take.
I'll check that. I think I've probably heard of most of them.
Oh, you've heard every last one of them. It starts with Mr. Sandman.
Oh, yeah.
And comes all the way up to the current era. It's mind-boggling. And it was so funny because I brought Ferg in to watch it, of course.
Yeah, that's good.
And he recognized some of the licks, and a couple of them he said, I can play that.
Yep.
And then he heard, and this will make Tim from L.A. run around the room dancing. He heard the opening riff to Rush's The Spirit of Radio. And he said, I got to learn to play that, Dad. So
we've been blessed with guitar players in this country since 1940, really, or earlier, if you want to count Robert Johnson and people like that.
Yeah. Well, you have to start with Robert Johnson. And who was Charlie Christian?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was with Benny Goodman.
And then you come up through Les Paul just sort of redefining everything.
Oh, God, yes.
Because he took what Charlie Christian did, electrifying a guitar, and, you know, the rest is literally history.
I remember Les and his wife's stuff being played on the radio. Sunrise, World is Waiting for the Sunrise, and, geez, you know. There are so many great ones, but, you know, there's been so many things going on, and you've been through the mill. I got to give you credit, and... He said something about your wife having patience. God bless her.
Yeah, and any other deity anyone cares to mention, and
yeah.
Some that don't. Well,
you know what? It's like what terminology were you supposed to? Like, am I supposed to use when I don't really believe in the person I just talked about?
Yeah, exactly. But yes, she, as usual, kept She kept a hell of a lot more plates spinning than I did. That's just the bottom line. Hey, Bill, I got a roll, but it's awful good to hear from you.
We'll talk to you next week, hopefully.
All right, sounds good. Have a wonderful weekend. Later. Bye now. Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Let's see if there's one more person online here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Mike from a state of pink slime out here in Iowa.
Oh, hey, Mike. Good to hear from you.
Yeah, I mean, after all, we're one of three states that are going to feed pink slime to the school children.
Yum-y.
Governor Terry.
Yeah.
Governor Terry along with Governor Rick Perry. I mean, I would have thought Terry would have understood looking at the Des Moines Register front pages from about a year ago of the state fair of Rick Perry and Michelle Bachmann with their corn dogs. Do not get photographed with Rick Perry eating.
You would think.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, Big Ag in a place like Iowa, you no sooner want to cross Big Ag in Iowa than you want to cross Big Coal in West Virginia.
Well, Governor Kerry got, I think, what was 50 grand from the pink slime people when he ran for governor. So, and Governor Kerry is like Governor Rick down there. Both are sitting governors receiving a pension for being governor. Governor Kerry had resigned and then ran again, but Governor Rick, for some reason, got a pension, having never left the office. I'm not quite sure about that one.
You know, well, what we say around here, great work if you can get it.
I mean, anyone heard the words welfare queen?
Yeah, funny how the 1% never wants to apply it to themselves. Mike, I'm sorry I got to you so late, but
okay.
I hope we'll hear from you next week and have a wonderful weekend.
Okay, hey, I enjoyed your comments on Malloy about Roberts' decision on the Supreme Court on the Affordable Care Act, because you're right, we're screwed with it.
Yeah, they took the one thing that meant anything, watered it down to nothing, and handed us the one thing that meant the least.
No, he's going after everything with the Commerce Clause. That means fair labor laws, minimum wage, child labor, everything. He's invited the people to come in. We're going to Citizens United, the FDR legacy.
Yeah. Nothing is safe. You know, they're going to, the court's going to go, in the next term probably, the court will go after the 1965 Voting Rights Act.
Yeah, impeach John Roberts now.
Exactly. And get Sammy Alito while we're at it.
Yep.
Take care, Mike. I hope we'll hear from you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. From Iowa, that's Mike, and it's time to get out of here. Friday on the Front Porch has flown past. We will start up with more Ann Monday, Surly, on Monday evening, 6 p.m., the usual time. Thanks to everybody who's made this all work. Thanks for meeting David from Maine's Challenge. Thanks for the additional that came in to help. I'm literally going to start paying bills as soon as I turn the stream off. Thank you very kindly. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to John Fox. And thanks to John Fox for turning me on to Leanna Rose. She's really awesome. And thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and most importantly, AcheAct.org. Go there and act on the Ache Act. Do your part to help end what is called Appalachia's agony. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. This is the horn.
Calling Paris. Come in, London. Come in, New York. Hello, Rio. The bad news is the world is ending. The good news is there's a party, but you better get here quick.
A special broadcast of HeadOnRadioNetwork.com from behind the lines of the Appalachian Sacrifice Zone.
When you feel like they've written off that they're on dead wood, about to get fed to the pigs. When that preacher's bust from hell, blasting just how Bell parked itself in front of your dig. There's a place you can go called Tierra del Fuego, down in the southern hemisphere. It's kind of Troy without Helen past the Straits of Magellan. And think they're always looking up down here. Cause there's a party at the end of the world, where the locals do the tango twirl. Forget the temples and the fall castle, the Fed in Montreal. There's a party at the end of the world.
I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is our first broadcast after the derecho.
Like I've run out of reason to be here, so I'm just gonna steal from myself. If your attitudes are falling, there's a latitude that's calling. Get yourself past that continental shelf. Now the band that we hire is playing quite inspired, singing Eskimos and eunuchs from Bangkok. And the location so nice we'll never run out of ice, cause Antarctica is just around the block. There's a party at the end of the world, where the locals do that tango twirl. Now don't make that big mistake and wind up with Miss Jamaica. There's a party at the end of the world. Flying machines, yellow submarines, French girls and cowboy decor, RSVP is the need, you see, and they'll all just be screaming for more. I'm more, I'm more.
I figured something like this was appropriate in light of what's happened for the last week. It's felt like the end of the world. It's 2 minutes past the hour. This is the Head On Radio Network. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid, and let's see. Okay, I threw the third switch, Tim. Tim, the show is on. It really is. Oh God, please, no gremlins. I can take anything but gremlins. God, no gremlins. And I, you know, I'd said yesterday evening, well, okay, back up. The last thing you heard here was on the 29th day of June. We had arrived home that day from an odyssey of sorts, and I was beginning to get into the details of that story. And I will once again restart that for the sake of continuity after the program ends tonight, just so that there will be some sense and sensibility to it. But God, now there's a 15-hour filibobster left to be done. Not just because we missed a bunch of shows last week, but because of why we were missing those shows last week. As I mentioned in the impromptu intro, we were struck Friday night by something called a derecho, which apparently is Spanish for either straight or right. At least that's what I forget whose Spanish dictionary it was that was consulted that tweeted that at me. We were hit by this massive blob of foul, vile weather. See, I told you I might just make animal noises. I might not even be speaking English by the time we're done. I might not be speaking any English known to humans. Because there's so much in my brain and so little, and the way that the conduit just sort of necks down on the way to the mouth that no, we hillbillies cannot be told that we got hit by a really big badass storm. No, as Sandra noted, we have to have a fine and fancy foreign word for it. Derecho. Hello, my name is Inigo de Derecho. You killed my father. Prepare to die. But the fact of the matter was, right about the time that I said, damn, there's a fly in my beer, and was anticipating hearing the rest of you in the chat room, or seeing the rest of you in the chat room saying, what's it doing, the backstroke? Or, don't tell her, everybody else will want one. There's two possible answers to that old chestnut of a one-liner. Those are them. About that time, the power just went click, and all the uninterruptible power supplies here in the Horn studio started beep, 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 beep. And when I had entered the studio, the weather had been hot and perfect. And when I finally gave up and the power went all the way out, and little did I know that it would be the last time we saw electricity for something like 10 days. Yeah, spit it out. Thanks, Jugapunch. Yeah, that's my reply to the fly. Spit it out! I just looked at him and said, ah, grave, where is thy victory? Ah, death, where is thy sting? W.C. Fields fan that I am. But no, when the power went out and it was all done and I'd gotten all the computers shut down and protected and everything unplugged and yada, 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 all the things that have to happen. Well, then I walked out on the front porch of the mansion here. And you could see that, I mean, it was a straight up case of something wicked this way comes. Because there's a little V off to the west where the weather comes up the gorge. And it was a color of purple, like a badass bruise that I don't think I've ever seen before. And it was as still could be. I mean, not a breath of air moving. And Ferg and I stood there And he looked at me and he said, Dad, I think this is going to be bad. I said, well, by all means, let's stand here and watch it. He said, no, I'm going inside. This is Fearless Ferg. Dad, I'm going inside. I may go to the basement. No, Tim, I'm sorry. I don't have photographs. When you see something like this coming, unless you're somebody whose world revolves around capturing photographic images, it's very easy simply to be transfixed, and I was. I mean, it was quiet. Not a bird making a sound. Nothing. And it just got darker and darker and darker, and you'd have to understand the nature of the topography around here. We sit on the low side of a hill that's right in front of us across the road. Across the road, there's a house and a hill. And I sat there watching this thing, and when that cloud wall got to the top of the hill, all of a sudden, still not feeling so much as a breeze down where we are, I watched pine trees that were 4 and 5 feet around bent like birch saplings in the spring being played with by little kids. And you know how, and in fact, there's a drive-by trucker's song along the same lines. It sounded like a freight train. You'll always hear that. Well, what everybody else thought sounded like a freight train to me. It didn't sound. I know what a freight train sounds like. This didn't sound like a freight train. This thing sounded like an animal. It sounded like the angriest animal, bellowing, hurt, vicious, hateful, murderous, venomous you've ever heard in your life. Somewhere between a bull and a bull elephant, both of them rabid. And it came down and over and blew past. The house shook. Agnes said, Bob, I think this is a tornado. And I looked at her and said, no, honey. This ain't no tornado. I know from tornadoes. I realized it was time to come in off the porch when the winds sort of picked me up off my feet and blew me five feet sideways into the gas grill. That's when I came in. The power was already out, and the thing just howled around us, and it was gone. It came, and it went, and it was gone. At one point, with everything else gone, I used the smartphone to call up a satellite map at Weather Underground. And all in the world there was, and in fact, I tweeted the picture, all in the world there was this red, yellow, and nasty blob that was just concentrated over the state of West Virginia. As if it really was an animal that had just squatted on us. But no, it was blowing past because it had actually started in Chicago about 10 hours before and had blown across the upper Midwest and just slammed into us like a truck, like a bus, like a freight train. And by the time it had blown through, something on the order of 700,000 people in the state of West Virginia, which is the vast majority of the West Virginia population, as well as a few hundred thousand people in Virginia, as well as a big chunk of the nation's capital, the District of Columbia, were out of electricity for God knew how long. Yeah, Psychoticus, derecho. You have to say it like that. Derecho. Sparky, how did the roof do? Well, come Saturday morning, I went out and picked some more roof out of the yard. You know, it would have cost a lot to have workers come and remove the roof before a new one could be put on, so I figure maybe we'll just wait till the weather does the rest of it and pick it up a little bit at a time. No, it was a mess. Oh yeah, there's lots of stuff to go into, Benedict. Yeah, this was a little global warming moment. Just like the Colorado wildfires are a little global warming moment. And the next day dawned as hot can be around here, up in the 90s. And vacillated between 90 and 100 degrees more or less for the entire week. And, you know, it's frustrating here because I had more stories to tell from the road to tell before I told this story, and I don't know where to go at this point. It was weird. Nobody had electricity. That meant no one had gasoline. That meant even if you had a generator, you couldn't run it. That meant for the next couple of days, you were pretty much guaranteed to lose everything in your refrigerator and your freezer. I wouldn't be surprised if the thrown away food tally in this state alone measured in the millions of dollars. Because God knows everything we had went bad. I tried to get the old generator going, but it had gone to its long home and its just reward. God knows it had put in its time. A lot of time. May get it running yet. But this is where the goodness of people comes into play and where praise must be heaped out in great helpings. I was desperate to get on the air and talk about what was going on here because beyond the simple fact of this bizarre weather event, there was more. And I badly wanted for the world to know that while this was going on, not everyone was suffering. Some people were having the time of their lives. A party at the end of the world. But a word about the kindness. Kate and Tim led the charge and made it possible for us to literally survive. And I don't use that word loosely. I don't mean like be more comfortable. I mean survive. They in turn contacted Mike Malloy and Kathy, who in turn put out a call for help. And it is this simple. We were able to return some electricity to our home. We were able to run the generator that we were able to purchase. And we were able to have food because of the Horn family and the Truth Seekers and Mike and Kathy Malloy. It is that plain and that simple. Because you see, one of the things that happened in the derecho, or as we here in West Virginia like to call it, really big ass storm. One of the things that happened here was that we were completely exposed. And I'm not talking about anything, quit it. If you are a familiar of this program, you have heard from time to time as we have carried on conversations talking about how precisely fragile, how utterly fragile everything is that we depend upon. If you listen to Malloy, you'll hear people from time to time saying, you got your rice, you got your beans, you got your bottled water, you want it. You know what? We will never be without it again. Because I won't let us be without it again. A lot to be said for peanut butter. A lot to be said for saltines, because they don't mold like bread does. Yeah, it's prairie too. His name's Bruce, isn't it? I think so. Well, there will always be rice, and there will always be beans, and there will always be jugs of fresh water here, because when everything else went out, so did the water, because they couldn't run the pumping stations. Now, here's where it gets interesting. Oh, yeah, and the camp stove. That's what enabled us to do crazy stuff like boil water. We literally survived because of the Horn family and the Truth Seekers. And you feel a sense of connection and of family that until you've been in a circumstance like that, you really can't express. Because bear in mind that all of this time, there was no National Guard. There was no FEMA. There were no emergency services. There was nothing and no one. In that sense, it was as still after the storm as before it. Except for one place, and one place only. A little place called Greenbrier County, West Virginia, and more... not all of Greenbrier County, just a little niche of Greenbrier County. Because, you see, there's a guy in this state named Jim Justice. And Jim Justice is a billionaire who has made his vast fortune blowing up mountains, burying streams, scraping away little bullshit seams of coal, and selling wherever he can for the best price that he can get, while at the same time ruining communities and poisoning men, women, children, and infants in the womb, because that's what mountaintop removal does. Well, he sold off some of his interests some time back, and flush with his nouveau riche cash, decided that he wanted to have him a resort. So he bought the Greenbrier Resort, literally one of the oldest getaway resorts for the 1% in the entire history of the country. White Sulphur Springs, West Virginia, is the home of the Greenbrier, and there's a golf course there called the Old White. And a few years ago, three to be precise, Jim Justice convinced the the Professional Golfers Association, otherwise known as the PGA, to come and play them a golf tournament in the summer down there in Greenbrier County. And it just so happened that the derecho hit. I didn't say it right, did I? Derecho. It just so happened that the derecho hit the weekend before Jim Justice's golf party was to take place. And when a billionaire mountaintop removal coal mogul says the show must go on, in the state of West Virginia, by God, the show must go on. Because that equates to the billionaire mountaintop removal coal mogul saying froggy and getting to watch everybody from members of the U.S. Senate to the governor to various and sundry political hacks and flacks yell, how high, sir? Because it wasn't just a golf tournament. And, oh, it was a golf tournament where Tiger Woods was going to be here. Hoo-wee! I guess Tiger didn't get the memo about West Virginia quite possibly being the single most racist state in the United States. Then again, Tiger needs all the PR he can get. But it wasn't just the golf tournament. There was a week of celebrations. Why, on Wednesday, the 4th of July, they'd done contracted to have Toby Keith himself come here and sing all of his hits, including courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue that talks about putting a boot up somebody's ass. And they signed Rod Stewart and Lionel Richie to come and sing another night. And then the last night was all going to be the big blow off, the big send-up, because they done got Bon Jovi. I guess Ted Nugent was busy. They done got Bon Jovi to come and sing about stuff like Living on a Prayer. Yeah, I think Lionel was like the warm-up act for Rod Stewart. And all of that had to go down. It had to happen. It couldn't not happen. It's too important. There's jobs being created for people sitting on the side of the road with umbrella parasols over their head and signs that says, need tickets. You know, scalpers. I've seen them myself. No photographs. I was a man with a mission at that point in time, and driving down the road taking pictures of scalpers while trying to find what I thought might be the last generator in southern West Virginia. Well, they didn't mix. But guess what? Even though a storm that had been equated with a hurricane that came without warning, that's what emergency officials in Virginia, where their coastal area periodically gets hit by hurricanes, but whose legislature had to have the word sea level rise removed from study plans because sea level rise is liberal code. Virginia emergency officials said the storm caused as much damage as a hurricane, but with about 3 days less warning. Power poles were down everywhere. And yes, like I said, we got completely exposed. There are some places around here that did not get strung electric service until after the passage of the Rural Electrification Act in the FDR administration. I'm not kidding. My mother was a part of one such family. She used to tell me about what it was like to have electricity from Delco batteries. But that system that was put in place as a result of the Rural Electrification Act is largely the system that was knocked not to its knees but down on its face on Friday, the 29th of June. Power poles came down, lines snapped, trees fell across roads. It was a sure enough mess. but it was the damnedest thing. Even though it was a sure enough mess, by the time we had been the recipient of the kindness and generosity of the Horn family and the Truth Seekers, we were able to drive to Lewisburg, West Virginia, because I had called everywhere, probably within a 100-mile radius, trying to find a generator. Because, among other things, I wanted to get back on the air because I wanted to be telling this story. Me. Because, among other things, to the extent that I could follow it, no one was telling this story. The media down in this state was like something out of the old Soviet Union. Power crews are working around the clock to come from as far away as Texas to restore power to blah, 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 blah. Well, yeah, I guess that's a great story that power crews have come from Texas. And I sure appreciate them coming. Talked to a couple of fine fellows from Beaumont. But what that tells you is that the old, sometimes 100, sometimes 80, sometimes 75-year-old power grid maintained by companies like Appalachian Power are understaffed and underfunded because all of the money goes into corporate profits and CEO salaries. For real. Over that weekend, we had a couple of cans of gas for the lawnmower, and they had gone into the vehicle so that the vehicle could be run with the air conditioner going and we could keep cell phones charged. The one thing that was still working were the cell phones. Not enough internet, not enough wireless internet bandwidth for me to use an app on the phone to get a show out, but enough to be able to do a little tweeting and listen to a little bit of the outside world, most particularly Malloy's show. And to try to tell people what was going on here. This is a disaster. It still is a disaster. Some 16,000 people are still without power in this state and may remain so for 3 weeks. But here's the interesting thing. Upon hearing that there was a generator to be had, oddly enough, in Lewisburg, which is the county seat of Greenbrier County, Margie and I drove down there while Ferg and Agnes guarded the mansion here. And we got down there, and there, lo and behold, there was all manner of law enforcement. Right there from the minute you got off of I-64 down onto the main drag going into Lewisburg, cops directing traffic. I hadn't seen a cop in days. Saw a couple of National Guard vehicles running around. Hadn't seen any of those either. Eventually, we would see our first National Guard vehicle pulling into the Taco Bell in Summersville, where they had some electricity and were able to pump some gas. There is a convenience store chain, and I don't know what their politics are, but at the time I didn't much care. While others were not up and running, the Sheetz chain diverted gasoline trucks to places like Summersville so people could stand in line or sit in line or wait in line and get gasoline to run their generators and run their vehicles. And so my thanks and my admiration goes out to whoever had the presence of mind to be that much on the ball with the folks at Sheetz, S-H-E-E-T-Z. There's a lot of criticism to go around out of this, but there's no fault to be handed to them. And they didn't gouge. It was the regular price. On the other hand, I got the hell gouged out of me for a gas can. Five-gallon gas can, $30. Really. And some of that did go on. One person pulled over a day after we got our generator. Saw a person pulled over with a semi-tractor trailer load of generators in Oak Hill, West Virginia, and they were selling them for $1,400 to $1,500 that would retail for around $6. But we got down to Lewisburg, and lo and behold, when you get off the interstate there, you're headed right for the West Virginia State Fairgrounds, which were to be part of the venue for all of Jim Justice's big golf party. Although I'm sure the checkered pants polyester crowd didn't go there. There's all kind of infrastructure running around down there in Lewisburg. And yeah, we eventually found the Lewisburg incarnation of Tractor Supply and got our generator. It was too late to save any of the ruined food, but it did at least mean that we could have light and some cooling. Couldn't run the stove because it runs on too much voltage. And we even powered up the studio. Only to find out that our ISP was deader than a stump. Had gone down with everybody else. That was frustrating. But the party went on. Toby Keith did, in fact, play the 4th of July celebration. Rod and Lionel sang their happy little hearts out, and Bon Jovi rocked the night away. Meanwhile, in Fayette County, here from the county from which we broadcast, was the hardest hit of all the counties. And there was no National Guard to be seen. And there was no FEMA to be seen. Ice cubes, forget it. Water was scarce. They got a Wally World open over in Summersville, and we bought jugs of that purified baby drinking water, which is just drinking water. And Tractor Supply had some pallets of individual water bottles, so we got some of those too. Meanwhile, though, they were partying away down at the Old White, the Greenbrier. You know, you can't stay at the Greenbrier for, like, less than, I think, $350 a night. If you ever wanted to see a bright line divide drawn between the 1% and the 99%, the last week in West Virginia is pretty much it. All the resources that were necessary to try to get West Virginia back on its feet were pumped deliberately and intentionally to supporting a golf party. A golf party. A golf tournament. Anyone who's ever been through a natural disaster, especially people who've been through hurricanes, and they have gone through much more because at least this didn't come with floodwaters. understands what I'm talking about when I talk about feeling utterly alone. Now, this being Wednesday, and Wednesday being prayer night, I do have to mention that God is a God of irony. And so it was that 2 hours before the power came back on, someone from emergency services did knock on the door here to make sure we weren't all dead inside. They eventually did open a cooling station, and the National Guard began offering some meals down at the Baptist Church here. I asked my family. I gave them the vote. Y'all want to go down there for some ice? And I have to tell you, the vote was unanimous. Let's see, what were the official words, dear? We would die first before setting foot in the Baptist church. Yeah.
Well.
No. Yeah, you have to talk into the microphone, dear.
No, if our kids were in bad shape, we would...
Speak up, honey.
The church was taken over as an emergency facility, Bob.
No, it wasn't.
Really?
It was being run by church people.
You know,
with the aid of the National Guard, who finally did find it. You know, we're hard to find. We're only on a road called the Midland Trail that's been in use since before white people got here.
They found us on day 10.
Yeah, they found, right. That's what I was just telling. They found us on day 10. Y'all need any water or anything? No, not
but
now.
But I'm appreciative they found us on day 10.
Yeah.
It would have been nice if they could have done it on day 2. Not so much for us, but the older folks out the road.
More praise goes out to one of the whitewater rafting companies.
Class 6.
Who ran empty buses to and out this road and back and out this road and back time after time, just picking up folks and taking them to some degree of relief.
Yes, and Billy stopped by the first day, asked if we were okay. And thank you all. We love you.
So it wasn't Mad Max. And it wasn't Lord of the Flies. But there was something especially galling knowing that... knowing that the 1% were partying as if nothing were wrong, while literally something on the order of 500,000 people suffer. Death toll, Tim, I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever know. Like I said, there has been an information clampdown here of epic proportions. I mean, this has been something straight out of Home on the Range, where nothing is heard, where never is heard a discouraging word, and the skies are not cloudy all day. Well, that much was true. The skies were not cloudy all day. The skies were not cloudy, the humidity was ridiculous, and the temperatures approached triple digits. And only in the last couple of days have the number of National Guard vehicles that I can count exceeded one hand. Now, it wasn't a microburst, Susan. It was a straight line storm that went for hours on end at high speed with high winds. It is, in fact, if you look it up, Wikipedia has it under derecho, D-E-R-E-C-H-O. Oddly enough, the Spanish word for right winger is derechisto. Like I said, God is a God of irony. Ron and Raleigh asking, hey, Bob, any of those minimum wage crews from Scranton, Pennsylvania show up? No, most of the boys I saw were from down Texas way. Dr. John noting, Beaumont, no kidding, my hometown. The utility, Entergy, goes down if a bird flies too close to the lines. Glad they could help. No, Ron, no. No tattered leathers, no sawed-off shotgun, and a scruffy dingo on the seat beside me. Sorry, no. There was a fairly malcontent Siamese cat, but she really isn't into sitting next to guys in scruffy leather with sawed-off shotguns. Okay, how did you guys manage the bathroom deal in your home for 10 days of no power? I am married to a pioneer woman, and I am lucky to be. We have what is commonly referred to as a leaky basement, because this house literally sits on a spring. So there's a sump and a sump pump, and with no electricity to sump the pump or pump the sump, we would bring up buckets of water with which to flush. Marty writing in, that Toby Keith song is my brother-in-law's favorite. Every time he gets to that boot up your ass, it's the American way part, I always see a bunch of cluckers in costume at a lynching, hauling up the rope. Yeah, it kinda is. Tim noting from L.A., Bob, I live in Los Angeles, and we don't have that kind of weather yet. Amazing, though, in all your life you've never seen anything like this? No, I really have not. I've seen tornadoes. This was not that. This was like if you've ever been out on a speedboat or a ski boat or something, you know, the wind is directly in your face all the time. There was no swirling. It wasn't coming from one direction and then from another. It was all right there. Tim continuing, and if any of them teabag morons say, "There ain't no global warming," send them out there and let them stand in the field. No, the purple sky was not a tornado. It was a rolling, boiling, straight wall of violent weather. Scary stuff out there, says Tim. Now mix in purple clouds with some radiation from Fukushima. Ferg was smart, says Tim. Go to the basement. And so, really, it wasn't just me. There were ongoing queries banging back and forth across the interweb tubes to the extent that any of us had them. I was working via AT&T wireless internet that was running bandwidth speeds of about 0.5 down and 0.1 up. But we heard, for instance, that a very, very good community service group called the Southern Appalachian Labor School here in Fayette County was having to make like Pharaoh or make like the children of Israel after Pharaoh had told them to make bricks without straw. They had people coming up begging for stuff, desperately in need, and they couldn't meet their needs. At one point in time, the officials tried to get feeding stations in Fayette County set up on the perimeter border of Fayette County, down, oddly enough, by Greenbrier County, you know, in case any of the 1% got hungry or wanted a hot dog or some pork and beans or something. But the goodness of people began to come through and show through. Among other groups, Coal River Mountain Watch,
and a member of the Coal River Mountain Watch Board gathered much-needed items. Money donations weren't much count, because if you had all the money in the world, you couldn't buy ice. So ice was carried in. And canned goods, and crackers, and peanut butter, and graham crackers. One of the staffers down at Coal River Mountain Watch said it was amazing to find out that the biggest hit, one of the biggest hits of stuff that had been delivered was graham crackers and peanut butter. Yeah, you remind me, Marty. In the midst of all of this, George Will declared that what was knocking us to our faces was simply summer. That it's just hot in summer, and there's no such thing as global climate catastrophe. Really. Along the way, the friends of coal decided in the midst of this year disaster that they would have themselves a rally and a march down in Logan County. And the friends of coal did. And they rallied their coal friendliness. And they done had them a march, and they marched, and they rallied, and they rallied, and they marched, and they speechified. And when they got to speechifying, you know what they speechified about? See, this here's what happens when you try to end the mountaintop removal and close down the coal-fired power plants. That's what you're going to have. And because they are an ignorant, violent lot, there was no one there to say, no, you dumbasses, this is what you have when you pump the atmosphere full of carbon, like you want to keep on doing. Interesting thing pointed out to me by my buddy and colleague, Bo Webb. He said, Bob, you can track the worst damage of this storm because wherever there was a mountaintop removal operation, there was devastation beyond comprehension below it. You see, and you know what? It's true. Because we got one just a couple of miles from us, and I mean this thing blew straight over it. Because we used to have these things called mountain peaks that would stick up into the air and slow some of this crap down. I mean, it's not a rain shadow like the Cascades or anything. But it did. And one of the nice things about living in West Virginia used to be that you never really got any high wind storms because there was nowhere for a tornado to touch down. I mean, they'd blow around and, you know, scare the chickens and stuff, but none of this really weird stuff. But, shortly afterward, there was an AP story saying, guess what? This is what climate change looks like. Understand, of course, that there's a big difference between weather and climate. It was noted that this is not only what it looks like, but that the scientists who've been trying to warn us about climate change all along were actually lowballing. They were sandbagging. They were underestimating the potential damage. The hurricanes will get meaner. The fires will get more prolific and hotter and move faster because the drought will spread more inexorably. And weird things like derechos will come blowing across the American heartland because the climate is changing. And when we say the climate is changing, perhaps we undersell that in its own right. The planet is changing. The planet is becoming harder for human beings to inhabit. Water becomes more scarce. Summers become hotter, winters become colder. You know, in the midst of all of this, everybody's saying, "Oh, yeah, I ain't never seen a storm like that before." And, of course, the for-profit media in West Virginia are largely owned by the coal industry, so don't expect any major discussions of climate change. But there's a little thing they forget. This isn't isolated. Back in early October, I remember it because my beloved Mountaineers were on the road playing the Scarlet Knights of Rutgers in New Jersey. In early October of 2011, when both New Jersey and West Virginia were blanketed by a couple of inches of snow. Because the planet is changing. The planet is changing, and not for the better. And still, not a word as the 1% partied merrily along at the old white. To the extent that they were able to publish, the newspapers, especially the Beckley Register Herald, made sure to print front page photos in living color of the golf tournament. By Friday, almost all stories of disaster or trouble had disappeared, and we were back to home on the range. And the 1% partied on. Like I think I said, we saw our first National Guard vehicle in Somersville, West Virginia, pulling into a Taco Bell. Saw another one a few days later at McDonald's. And that's the new model. Rather than having viable disaster relief that is managed and provided by the government of we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, instead, we devote efforts to getting Walmart open. I mean, ice was rationed. Sorry, can't have it, two bags. Ice was rationed. Still hard to come by. Now, we discovered some things after a couple of 3 days of being out. It appears that our old refrigerator was exposed to. It ain't quite getting cold like it ought to be getting cold, and the ice maker water hickey has done sprung a leak. Agnes has been pioneer womaning that along. I remember when Kate would say, "I'll get a woman on it." Really. I kept the generator running, and y'all kept gas. Well, y'all provided the generator, and you kept the generator going. And I attended to the generator's needs rather like a feeding schedule with a newborn. While Agnes attended to everything else. David in Maine, "This sounds like liberal whining to my ears. In the olden days, we didn't have much water. We had the thought of water to keep us from dehydrating. The thought was worth something back in them our days. Have you tried to eat tree bark soup? You don't need water. Just mix in some mud with the tree bark, and you're good to go. Now, if you excuse me, I have some unicorn fillets. The best time for having unicorn is a summer like this. Let the power of your positive thinking generate all of West Virginia. For shame, Bob, for shame." Don't forget, unicorn fillet goes very well with lark's vomit and hummingbird tongues, David. But they done had them there. Hey, don't stop the mountaintop removal, or the lights will go out again, because God loves coal. G Jim noting, yeah, the band played on. One percenters had their escape, and the third class suffered and still suffer. Amen. But the band played. I mean, that's what was so stunning to me about all of this. It was literally... It was, if you could equate, and I'm sure the blessed dead of the band that played on the deck of the Titanic would be horribly offended to even have this equation made, but if you can equate Toby Keith, Lionel Richie, Rod Stewart, and Bon Jovi to the band playing on the deck of the Titanic while the 1% get in the lifeboats, that's it. That's it. News Ninja Susan sending a story along noting, the following is from a report about 13 dead in the storm. You notice there are no deaths from West Virginia. My ass, says Susan. The storm did damage from Indiana to New Jersey, although the bulk of it was in West Virginia, Washington, and suburban Virginia and Maryland. At least six of the dead were killed in Virginia, including a 90-year-old woman asleep in bed when a tree slammed into her home. Two young cousins in New Jersey were killed when a tree fell on their tent while camping. Two were killed in Maryland, one in Ohio, one in Kentucky, and one in Washington. But, you know, that's some of this stuff is difficult to quantify. How many lives were shortened? We heard one story from a reliable source, a woman I know who had gone to Lewisburg to sit with her octogenarian aunt during the pendency of this crisis. Jim Justice's golf party was powered up, and this octogenarian lady lived only probably not more than 2 miles away from the site, but power stopped at the party concert venue. While this lady and many others like her sweltered in killing. This was the reality of the last week and a half. Power did finally come on Sunday evening. And lo and behold, the internet hotted up too. I was all fired up on Monday to be doing what I'm doing now. Only to have the internet go down at about 4 p.m. And it stayed down all through yesterday and came back late last night. Reason given was that a piece of fiber optic cable had been cut, I guess, by another downed line, because just as things were getting patched back together, another line of storms, not anything like a derecho, rolled through and took out a lot of the work that had already been done, because it was done with baling wire, wet toilet paper, a piece of gum, a little bit of bat shit, and some chewing gum wrapper, you know, a la MacGyver. They finally did get some power down to the little town just below us. They did that by patching one of those industrial generators into the grid so that we could have gasoline pumped down there. There was still no ice. Over at the Page Kincaid, West Virginia Public Service District, that public service district had to rent, at the cost of some $680 a day, a generator to get its public water supply going, because FEMA never showed up. Now, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, the governor of West Virginia, declared the state of emergency lickety-split, because that allowed him to then direct resources to... Yeah, you get the idea. FEMA officials on the national level rely on local authorities to tell them where aid is needed. Well, the aid was needed at Jim Justice's Professional Golf Association Checkered Pants Golf Party. On the other hand, now that the golf party is over, the National Guard is to be seen widely around Fayette County, now that the power's back on for a lot of us. Still several thousand in this county that don't have it, and in other more isolated counties. You want to talk about a little blessing? There's a community down in the Coal River Valley called Printer. You've heard me talk about Printer in the past because their water was poisoned, and so were they, by mountaintop removal coal companies. And at one point in time, Coal River Mountain Watch started something called the Printer Water Project. And donations used to buy great big 55-gallon blue plastic potable water containers. And for week after week and month after month, Coal River Mountain Watch provided water to the printer community into those barrels. So lo and behold, in one account that went across the TV, there was the Racine, West Virginia Volunteer Fire Department doing an excellent job taking one of those water buffalo trucks up to Printer and taking fresh water to the residents of Printer Holler. And guess what they were putting it in? Those blue barrels that would not be there but for Coal River Mountain Watch. Big praise has to go to the Southern Appalachian Labor School. Coal River Mountain Watch put on a fundraising drive and used it to purchase supplies and transport them into Fayette County and into Greenbrier County, where people just miles from the old white had been left to fend for themselves. There are questions that badly need to be answered but will not be answered because no one in the for-profit media here dare ask them. The simple question of what was necessary to get the pro golf party and the concerts on. I mean, did God just like the Greenbrier better and left it unscathed and untouched? When practically the entire state of West Virginia was had a Warner Brothers sized piano, anvil, and whatnot rock dropped on them? Of course not. Just as the storm itself was a naked display of raw power, so too was getting that golf party up and running a naked display of raw 1% power. Granny, you sweat in the heat. We got to get Toby Keith's the PA system up and running, honey. Hell, you're 80 years old. You remember what it was like to eat beans and be glad to have them. Well, it's just like that again. Don't want to hear no complaining. If you ain't got any beans, we'll get around to you. Most of this state's obese anyway. Do you good to lose a little weight. And now this. I saw it just before showtime. It has been a week-long struggle not to run screaming out into the yard, tearing at my clothing and my hair, and again, making those aforementioned animal noises. This just about pushed me over the top. Now, bear in mind, West Virginia's junior senator, Joe Blanche Manchin. Remember, he's Blanche Lincoln with better hair. And Jim Justice are great pals. If you're any kind of a coal baron, community poisoner, coal thug, whatever, you're going to be Joe Manchin's dear pal. So this from the Associated Press today. The thousands of West Virginians still without power following summer storms have U.S. Senator Joe Manchin questioning $94 million in aid heading to Afghanistan.
Okay.
The freshman Democrat spoke Wednesday against this funding meant to improve reliable electricity. He called it the starkest example of misplaced priorities. No, Joe, your own constituents just lived through that. Starkest example of misplaced priorities. Your constituents just lived through your billionaire coal thug mountaintop removal community ruin and fetus poison and pal Jim Justice's golf party while we sweltered in the heat. More than 14,000 West Virginia homes and businesses remained in the dark nearly 2 weeks after the violent storms first struck on June 29th. Officials estimate that outages affected 1.4 million of the state's 1.8 million residents at some point. Wow, numbers gone up. And by the way, do you notice that we're residents, according to the Associated Press? Words matter. How about officials estimate that outages affected 1.4 million of the state's 1.8 million citizens? No, baby. What, Dr. Freud? Yes. That is one of those slips you were talking about. Yes, that is. You're absolutely right. We are here at sufferance to the coal companies. It's the truth. If we were citizens, we'd be citizens. But we are. We're just residents of West Virginia until it turns out that we're in some godforsaken coal company's way. Manchin said some West Virginians won't regain water service for 2 or 3 more weeks. He referred to prior Afghan reconstruction efforts and said that when West Virginia gets help building bridges or schools, it doesn't blow them up or burn them down. I may be in the yard yet. No, Joe. We put giant sludge dams of toxic waste over our schools. We inject filth and poison into the bathing and drinking water of your constituents. We don't blow up bridges or schools, Joe. We blow up the oldest mountains on the daggum planet. You dumbass. The Noive. You know, the Noive, that guy. Tone deaf. It'd be nice if somewhere in this story was Manchin, having just returned from his pal Colbert and Jim Justice's golf party, said, "Well, you want them millions of dollars, at $94 million, what would you like for that to do here in West Virginia? Get the EPA off our backs." See, Joe Manchin, like his buddy, the governor, Earl Ray Tomlin, they're both running for re-election this year. As I said, there was an information lockdown, and information about the derecho's effects were hard to come by. Was hard to come by. So, using my slow bandwidth, but working bandwidth, and for some things I am grateful, I ran over to Earl Ray Tomlin's website, and it just happened I landed on his campaign website before I landed on his state government website. I found out later that there was some information about the storm on his official government website. It just so happened that I landed because of the way the search worked out. And it's still there. EarlRayTomlin.com. The first damn thing you see on Earl Ray Tomlin's campaign website has absolutely nothing to do with the disaster that has now transpired and about which he has been informed, because I damn sure tweeted it, and I know it got to him because I was upbraided by a West Virginia Democratic Party apparatchik. I think he's doing a great job. Well, I guess he was doing a great job if you judge great job by getting a goddamn golf tournament up and running in the face of a natural disaster on par with a hurricane. That's a great job. Of course, I have a slightly different perspective in that I tend to think that a great job has more to do with meeting the needs of the not residents, but citizens of the state of West Virginia. And the citizens of West Virginia needed electricity a hell of a lot more than they needed to hear Toby Keith sing about putting a boot in her ass. But if you want to go to EarlRayTomlin.com, you'll see that the first thing you get when you get there is, tell the Washington bureaucrats what you think. They're Washington bureaucrats. Use your heads. This new EPA rule is bad for jobs and bad for energy independence. It's bad for West Virginia and bad for Merca. Kill this rule before it kills our jobs and our communities. Add your comments here. Haven't gotten around to writing, dear Washington bureaucrat, Earl Ray Tomlin is a dumbass and should be no more listened to than the prattlings of a recent escapee from a mental hospital. But I may yet. That was there, and it's still there. Running his dumbass, disingenuous, downright lying, filthy, mendacious, war on coal hooey. While there are still tens of thousands of West Virginians who don't have electricity because that coal-fired ancient power grid is an absolute unmitigated failure. Fact of the matter is, and I told you all about this in a three-hour filibobster a month or month and a half, a month ago. Told you about going to Germany. Told you about seeing all them solar panels on all those roofs. Told you about everywhere you turn around, you saw a wind turbine. Here's a question. Those industrial wind turbines, and most of us have seen them, especially if you live in the Midwest, or maybe down Texas way. They're big old things. They're tall. They've got big old blades, and they just seem to sit there turning languidly in the breeze. And I remember the testing that was done for the Coal River Wind Project, where they were astonished to find out that we had some of the finest, really high wind potential at the top of Coal River Mountain that they had seen in recent time in the general geographic area. And I remembered standing on some really flat ground in Indiana on the way back from Netroots Nation in Minneapolis last summer. Stopped at a Stuckey's. My kids had never seen a Stuckey's. And the wind was blowing. I mean, it had your clothing starched out, even though it was high summer. Your hair blew back. I mean, if you'd thrown a baseball into the wind, it would have come back at you. Yeah, or that Altamont Pass in Northern California, Marty. And I asked the clerk inside the store, I said, is it windy like this here all the time? She said, absolutely like this. That's why they put them wind turbines over there. Wind's always 40 miles an hour here, and that's as little as it goes. So I got to thinking, what would have happened to an industrial wind turbine in 80-mile-an-hour derecho winds? Jesus, it would have been like a scene from from Oliver. More, please. Because those turbines are designed. I mean, 80-mile-an-hour winds, piffle. That's a snack for an industrial wind turbine. Not so good for a coal-fired 100-year-old power grid, though. And yes, there's a difference between transmission lines and distribution lines, as Ken Ward pointed out over at the Cold Tattoo. But we managed to even have shingles stay on this crummy old roof through those 80-mile-an-hour winds. Imagine what would happen, and I'm kind of into Brother Albert territory here. Imagine what would happen if all over the country there were solar panels on roofs and a distributed instead of centralized power grid. Hint, last week would not have happened. Because as soon as that storm passed over, the sun came out again. I was told on Twitter that Rachel Maddow had mentioned that on average, Germany has 21 minutes of electric power outages per year. That's minutes. It would be interesting to find out, and I'm making the inquiry, trying to find out, when the last time any place in Germany had a 10-day power outage, or a 2-week power outage, or a 3-week power outage. Because they have one of them distributed networks. What, Dr. John? What? Wind farms? They also create jobs. Maintenance folks, construction workers, and archaeologists. Oh, really? Federal and state-mandated cultural resource surveys ahead of construction, and those are great projects to work. Lots of walking and a hole every 15 meters, and if you find something, it doesn't derail the project, since the turbine footprints are small. Just move the tower 20 feet to one side. It's not like a billion-dollar coal-fired power plant that nobody wanted in Wise County, Virginia, but they got whether they wanted it or not, so that their children could go ahead and have them some of that asthma. We have been exposed. Pure and simple. We can have, the vision is out there of I mean, Earl Ray Tomlin wants to talk about some energy independence. I have yet to see the sun send us a bill. I have yet to see or to receive a phone call from the wind demanding payment. But to this day, the tired old liars of the coal industry continue to say, despite what happens out in the plains of Indiana, or the plains of Texas, or the Altamont Pass, the tired old liars of the coal industry say,
Well, wind and solar, that might be good in 100 years or so, but you know, technology ain't really been developed yet. We're going to be needing our coal-fired electricity for a while longer. So y'all just buckle in and wait for the blasting. If you's any kind of patriotic West Virginia resident, you'd stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance every time your windows crack or your well turns red.
We're going to be doing some water testing here. Like I said, we found out that the old refrigerator is probably not long for this world. And like I said, it developed a leak. And where it developed a leak, in the back of the fridge, there's a water little plastic water line comes in off the sink, and there's a little plastic water line goes out and up to the ice maker. We got that fridge about 12 years ago when Appalachian Power strung new power lines and put so much tension on them that it ripped the mast out from the roof here, caused the ceiling to collapse, and shorted out every electrical item in the house. Well, it appears that Appalachian Power's done it again. No, that was the derecho. And if we say it was a derecho, what we really mean is it was God. It was an act of God. But no, once back before city water came here, we had it attached to our well, the water dispenser and the ice maker. And there's this line that comes into this plastic gizmo that sat in the back of the bottom of the refrigerator that kept water cold, so you could get a cool glass of water right out of the door. And it developed some sort of ungodly pinhole. Agnes is probably in there bailing right now. And so she removed it. And I held it up to the light, and the damn thing is brown. Well, not really brown. Sort of a rusty, dried blood color. And I went to pour some of it out, and this sludge came out. Sludge, obviously, that we were consuming. So we're going to have that tested. It'll be interesting to see how many. I'll get the Kincaid teenagers together and say, "All right, kids, here's the assay list. Let's see how well you remember your periodic table of the elements and the heavy metals end of same. Cadmium, barium, magnesium, arsenic, manganese, aluminum, iron, arsenic." You know, like that. Yeah, we're going to have some water testing done. Are you getting the time you were in the dark taken off your bill? Now, there's one of the funnies. I had just paid the power bill when the lights went out. I would say no. No, we won't. Oh, interesting observation, Ron and Raleigh. This is the system that Ron Paul wants to replace FEMA with. Yeah, no thanks, Ron. Why don't you come live in it? Corey, writing from the free state of Louisville. Constituent? God, that's funny, Bob. You are Blanche Manchin's constituent like I am Addison McConnell's constituent. Blanche bows to the coal industry. Addison bows to the Defense Department. Well, he also bows to the coal industry. And the hell with the living, breathing citizens in both states. Right? Right. At least my representatives have the decency not to call themselves Democrats. Except, of course, for John Yarmuth. He's worthwhile. Jim writing in, now hear this. One of the local bloviator over in the AM station in America's fifth smallest radio market, one of his listeners said that the best solution
for Southern West Virginia was to pipe in air conditioning. Jim follows that with, no shit. Ow. So that's pretty much the story of the last week. The only thing being that it's not. There's stuff I will forget by the time that the mic cools down. Again, thanks to the Horn family and the Truth Seekers and Tim and Kate and Mike and Kathy and all of you who made it possible for us to survive this. Thank you, sincerely. But there will be more stories, and we'll get to them in due time. I still want to get to the stories from the Odyssey that I was in the process of telling on Friday night, the 29th of June, when I got back, because there's a couple of real... Well, there's a stupid story, and there's a horror story. And I want to share them both. But we'll... And yeah, I've been in kind of a Jimmy Buffett frame of mind. And why not stick with it? Sometimes you just need a little something to give you a better attitude. This did it for me. What you're listening to is commonly referred to as a filibobster. What you're listening to is the Horn, the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com. Although I've been doing all the talking, we call what we do here conversation radio, and it will be as soon as things return a little more normal. We are listener-supported, as I have noted. We still have lots of bills to pay because the kindness you extended went to survival, and that's no joke. But thank you. Thank you. We'll take a little break and come back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Together today. Well, now that's just the start. too cold. The daiquiri's too fruitful. No place like home when you're this far away. I don't care what they say. He's going back to New York. Pack it up and let everyone know. It was something that he should have done such a long time ago. Still time to start a new life in the palm tree. Ah, Billy Clyde wasn't insane. And if it doesn't work out, there'll never be any doubt that the pleasure was worth all the pain. The weather is here. I wish you were beautiful. The skies are too clear. Life's so easy today. The beer is too cold. The daiquiri's too fruitful. No place like home when you're this far away.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182. 82.
Before the hour, we're a little over halfway through the program. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. Available on a number of platforms across the interweb tubes when the interweb tubes cooperate and when the weather does, too. Things like Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, iTunes Radio, the good old reliable stream at whiterosesociety.org, and the stream that you can get just by clicking the Listen Live button at headonradionetwork.com. Got a note in from Dr. John a couple of minutes ago. He said, asked me to please remind folks because he has an idea of this is as much of a crisis as the Horn has ever faced. All told, there was something approaching $3,000 in losses and outlays together out of this disaster that befell us. And he knows that the Horn bills do need paying, and he asked me to convey that this would be a great time for him to step up and offer this month's challenge, $50 he's got that will go to anybody who wants to match the 50 so that it would make a total of $100 in contributions. He will match the next 50 that come in so that it will get a little bit toward the bill paying, and there are bills to pay. Lots and lots of bills. So thank you very much. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. I wanted to tell one more story out of the storm. Starting in about probably sixth grade, I had compare and contrast beaten into my head. You take thing one and you compare it to thing two and you contrast, you point out the differences between, for instance, thing one and thing two. And I'm not necessarily referring to the creatures that invade those children's home in The Cat in the Hat. But here's how it works out. Toward the end of the first week of the disaster,
I got wind, and I don't get upset and don't write any letters because it has a happy ending. And again, this is a compare and contrast moment. Ice in West Virginia toward the end of the week of the first week of the disaster was as rare as hen's teeth. And if you don't understand that analogy, it's because hens don't have teeth. It's kind of a countryism around it. By God, that's rare as hen's teeth. Well, ice was as rare as hen's teeth around here. As I've described to you, people were sweltering in near unbearable and potentially killing heat. I was reminded to tell you this story because I saw a cowgirl in the chat room, and we had talked to her some about this. It was ridiculous. I got wind on Friday that the following day, this past Saturday, our friends over at 350.org planned a publicity thing where they were going to mount a giant ice sculpture in front of the Capitol and sit there in blazing heat and watch it melt. The ice sculpture was to be of the word hoax, H-O-A-X, with a question mark, because that is, of course, what climate denier extraordinaire Jim Inhofe, senator from Oklahoma, has referred to the climate crisis as, a hoax. A giant hoax, hence the giant ice sculpture. And under better circumstances, it would have made perfect sense. But under the circumstances, as West Virginians were living them, in some instances, only 5 or 6 hours away from Washington, D.C., it just felt like a giant screaming slap in the face. And so, with limited means of outreach to me, I took to the Twitter and eventually had one of the most beautiful, amazing dialogues and discussions I have ever had with the folks over at 350.org. It is very easy, and I can tell you from having been intimately involved with the AKE campaign, for instance, which you can find at acheact.org, A-C-H-E-A-C-T.org, that dealing with some of the big greens is right frustrating. The Sierra Club, the biggest of the big greens, of course, you would think that they would be on board with something that has a real chance of ending mountaintop removal and actually saving lives in Appalachia. Not a penny. Not a penny from the Sierra Club. Not a sausage. And that dialogue was intensely frustrating. No sense in going into the details. But when I pointed out to the folks at 350 exactly, and they didn't really know, exactly what was going on in West Virginia, and raising $5,000 to melt a giant ice sculpture in Washington, D.C., would be just a little bit too much, would be insulting to some of the people who put up, who were right then and there putting up with some of the most dire consequences of climate change. Well, it was a long dialogue, but it was a beautiful discussion, and I found out the following morning that they had actually canceled the ice sculpture. And I was prouder of them than I knew how to express for having done so. Amazingly proud, pleased, thrilled. They caught some flack saying that, us hillbillies were trying to make it all about us. Well, when you'd crawl across ground glass for a 10-pound bag of ice, it is kind of all about the person. When someone is dying of thirst, water is about them. But they responded at 350 humanely, intelligently, compassionately, and I will forever be a friend of 350.org, remembering that they stood with beleaguered Appalachians when damn few others did. They stood with beleaguered Appalachians while the 1% partied the night away at the old white. So that's the first half of the compare and contrast thing. Here's the second half of the compare and contrast thing. I take you to Washington, D.C. where if your schedule permits and you've got the big bucks to do it, and you have absolutely no soul whatsoever, you might want to pop by on July the 19th from 5:30 p.m. till 9:30 p.m. for a white trash reception on the Hill. It's being hosted by Strategic Healthcare. It's being hosted and thrown, this white trash reception party, for lobbyists and people in the health industry to be able to mingle with Capitol Hill staffers. The photograph that goes with this is of one guy with a bandana around his head and a tattoo on one arm, holding what appears to be a Mickey's Big Mouth green bottle, and he's wearing a sleeveless undershirt. His buddy's got his arm around him, and he's got long, stringy blonde hair, and he's missing some teethus. He got him a bandana on, too, and a denim shirt with a name patch stitched over it, and his very, very white belly sticking out, because his denim shirt, or his blue-collar working shirt, ain't exactly what we'd call around here buttoned. We're talking about lobbyists and healthcare executives who probably make upwards of 7 digits a year if they make a penny. And they gonna go to a white trash reception on the Hill. Ho, ho, ho. Maybe they can get Toby Keith to play it. The aforementioned white trash that they mention. Oops. I think, yeah. Well, you know what I mean. Are, in many cases, the people who most benefit by access to health care. You know, affordable care, as in the Affordable Care Act. They might have even benefited from access to Medicaid if by a 7-2 majority, including dead-eyed John Roberts and Elena Kagan. No, 7 out of 9. Hadn't signed on saying that Medicaid provision of the Affordable Care Act, well, we couldn't make the states participate in it. That just wouldn't be right. We can't make the states extend health care access via a single-payer system to the working poor, or what Strategic Healthcare refers to as white trash. On their little poster it says, suds and grub will be provided. Disgusting. And nothing, no attempt would turn them away from this. Because, you know, it's funny to make fun of poor folks, especially if you can just cast them as ignorant rednecks. Now, to be fair, I know from ignorant rednecks, I deal with some. And yeah, I make a little, you know, I do a funny voice and things like that. But when it comes down to dying, Can you imagine what would happen if, and they never would, any of the organizations that have worked so tirelessly to try to get health care for all Americans, can you imagine what would happen inside the for-profit media if they declared that they was having a white trash reception on the Hill? They would be pilloried. They would be savaged. But since this is a Strategic Healthcare party being held for Washington, D.C., K Street lobbyists, well, then what's the harm? What's the harm? Hey, Dr. John, there's an idea. White trash reception? Time to call congressional offices and tell them not to go. Maybe ask if they'd go to a ghetto-themed reception or another nasty stereotype of your choice. Well, the funny thing is, if we were to do a little research, Dr. John, we might find out they've already had one of them. Can't say for sure. But Strategic Healthcare, according to the report I'm looking at from over at Think Progress, Strategic Healthcare says that it regularly throws themed parties where lobbyists and people in the healthcare industry can mingle with Capitol Hill staffers. Themed parties. I'd love to see what some of the other themes were. Remember when Immigrations and Customs Enforcement folks under the George W. Bush administration showed up for an illegal immigrant party? Yeah, that's another one of those stories. This is the horror story that I was going to tell you. On the way home from Selma, we stopped in my hometown. Made no difference. There were two different routes we could take. Made no difference one way or the other. But when it's the town where your mama and daddy are buried, and you haven't been there in 5 years, and you don't know when you'll be there again, you don't just blow through. At least not the way I was raised. So we did stop in my old hometown. And I had a chance to check in with some people that matter to me, and some friends. And I was told a story. And I'd give anything if there were some real journalists down there to actually dig it up and find out what's happened, because I haven't seen any coverage. Now, we have to do a little time travel for this, because you have to remember that fresh in my mind was the act of having taken a walk, a march, across the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama, just days before, in support of the rights of immigrants in that brutal state. One of those who came to stand with us and we with him held a sign, as I mentioned, that said simply, "I am not an illegal. I am your brother." And there in Selma, we heard manifest myriad horror stories of the effects of Alabama's pernicious Papers, Please law, of children afraid to go to school, of sick people afraid to seek medical attention, of workers used and abused. And they were, one and all, both shocking and horrifying. On the way north, we stopped in a little tiny town called Carrollton, Alabama, because I wanted to explain something to the kids. Carrollton, Alabama has a ghost story of the face in the courthouse window. It really. It is said that after the Civil War and during Reconstruction, a man was imprisoned in the topmost part of the new Pickens County Courthouse on charges that he had burned the previous one down that had just been built after the Northern troops had burned down the original. There's even a historic marker there. Pretty sure I took a picture of it. I'm looking for it now.
Did I not? Guess not. Maybe Agnes did. But he was a man of color. Name was Henry. And it is said that while he was imprisoned in the garret of the Pickens County Courthouse, a storm came up and that lightning struck him. He was killed. And that his face was forever imprinted in the window he was looking out of. Now, if you go and look on the internet, you'll find the photograph resembles nothing so much as a face from a minstrel show. The historical marker in front of the courthouse says the first courthouse erected at Carrollton was burned on April 5th, 1865. By troops of Union General John T. Croxton. A freedman, Henry Wells, was accused of burning the second on November 16, 1876. Now, there's one of those language moments. It's 1876. The war has been nearly 11 years over, and yet he's referred to as a freedman. How about just a man? He was arrested in January 1878. Interesting. 2 years. And held in the garret of this building. Legend holds that as Wells peered out of the north window as a lynch mob gathered below, I added the word lynch mob, it just says mob gathering below, lightning struck nearby, indelibly etching his image on the pane. And it's just a ghost story. I learned the ghost story of the face in the courthouse window of Pickens County, Alabama, in first grade. But it was only later that I came to understand what that really meant. That's no ghost story. That is a reminder that stands on the courthouse lawn of Pickens County, Alabama, to this very day. That lynch mobs are a very real thing. Otherwise, you would simply refer to him, the marker would simply refer to him as Henry Wells, not Freedman. After April 1865, there were no such thing as freedmen anymore. Except to the extent that there was a Freedmen's Bureau. They killed him, no trial, no jury, he was lynched. No indictment, no investigation. Nothing but transformation into a ghost story that stands mute warning to anyone who speaks Southern code. That they were still willing to lynch and would remain so. Because this is along about the time of the rise of the Klan. And so we made a stop by and I explained what it meant to the kids so that they wouldn't just think, ooh, scary story. Repeated attempts have been made to replace the plane to scrub it, replace the pane of glass, scrub it with kerosene, and yet the face returns. Bullshit. So it's not too awful far from there on up to the little town where I was raised, where, as I said, we visited Mom and Dad's grave, my children's grandmother and grandfather. Put some fresh plastic flowers in the bronze urn there that was turned upside down. And as I said, I talked to some friends and acquaintances and was told a story And it's a story that isn't being investigated. No journalism's being done about it. Haven't heard of any blogging being done over it. Hell, maybe it was bullshit. But I somehow doubt it, because the story came up in the course of a conversation about where I'd been and what I'd been doing. Immigrant rights, Selma. Now, you want to talk about a town full of ghosts. But they're still right upset that their bust of that old traitor, Nathan Bedford Forrest, was stolen from the Live Oak Cemetery, and they got a $20,000 reward billboard with Nathan Bedford Forrest's hateful old face staring straight down at the National Voting Rights Museum and the scene of the martyrdom of the 1965 Selma to Montgomery March cop riot. I mean, right over top of it, with his stony old eyes staring at that museum and memorial. $20,000 reward offered for the information leading to the arrest and conviction of whomever stole the bust of General Nathan Bedford Forrest from the Live Oak Cemetery. No kidding. All of it was fresh in my mind and has not been dimmed much by the enforced silence of the last week and a half. So it was in this context that this individual told me the story of the night that some immigrant laborers, part of an insurance company crew that travels all over doing repair work for storm damage and things like that, hail damage, you know. Because God knows an insurance company is sure as hell not going to hire some union laborer down in Alabama Stan or North Carolina Stan or Tennessee Stan or Georgia Stan or Mississippi Stan or Louisiana Stan or Texas Stan. No, hell no. They came into the establishment late, four of them probably, looking for a cold beer. All of them immigrants, all of them Hispanic, Latino, if you prefer. At the same time, there were in the bar people clad in black leather. You know, zipped up jackets down to the wrist. Thought maybe they were on bikes, but no, they were in an old pickup truck. Didn't make much in conversation. The immigrants made the mistake of sitting down at a table they thought was empty, but turned out to be occupied by these people in black. Some sort of words were passed. The immigrants never got the beer and realized it might be in their best interest to go ahead and leave. As they left, the people in the truck left as well. Turns out the folks in the truck followed the immigrants as they tried to cross the four-lane road. Three out of the four scattered out of his way, but the fourth, a young man from God knows where, thousands of miles from home, was run down. Leg was crushed. Collarbone was broken, maybe a broken wrist, abrasions, contusions, perhaps a head injury. All of this came after the fact when an advocate for the immigrants started asking a few questions, because they were hustled out of town lickety-split by their employer. who, because of Alabama's law, was not paying such things as workers' compensation or unemployment or God knows insurance. No police report was filed. No criminal investigation was performed. And as far as I know, of course this was a couple of weeks back, I was told as far as I know he's still laying in the hospital getting better until Immigration and Customs Enforcement can come and deport him. Anybody want to sing Toby Keith? Or maybe a little bit of Lee Greenwood about how if tomorrow everything I had was gone except my children and my wife, I'd thank my lucky stars and all that happy crap. No newspaper story. Nothing. Didn't happen because Alabama is a brutal place with a brutal law where lynchings still take place. I was told as sort of denouement to the story that the driver of the vehicle was heard to say, "Whenever I see me a Mexican, I do my best to kill him." We were gone the next morning. No way to stay and investigate. Nothing. Calls, I was told, had already been made. Nothing. Nothing. FBI wasn't on the case because it didn't happen. Just like a man alleged to have been in a courthouse window, nobody really saw anything happen. That was 1878. The story I was told was from 2012. And I came home with that on my mind. And it's been on my heart ever since. Had the power not gone out on Friday night, the 29th of June, you would have heard that story then. And I don't know what purpose is necessarily served by telling you that story, except to say that the young man in the hospital bed was, and I hope still is, a human being who, under the Constitution of the laws of the United States of America, is to be afforded due process of law and the equal protection thereof. But wasn't and isn't. And is merely one of countless faceless others to whom this and other sorts of vile, hate-filled evil are done in Alabama every day. Every day. Just are. Just are. One last story from the ride home. But we'll save that for another day. Because after all, this is conversation radio. And we don't have conversations without you. And you have your own stories. And you have your own concerns and your own realities. And God knows a ton of stuff that I have missed. In the silent stillness of a natural disaster in Appalachia, and the time that I spent on the road. And I hope you'll share them. You know the number, I trust, 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, if you don't want us to have to pay the toll-free freight, you can dial 304-658-3333. They both ring in to the same place. So give it a whirl. It's been a long time since we've had a chance to chat. And God knows I appreciate the opportunity to talk. Tamara writing in, oh my God, you're live. Yes, you're as excited as I am, Tamara. Immigrant deaths increasing here in San Diego too, especially at the borders. Sorry to hear the sad news from where you are and where you've been, but happy to have you back. Mighty happy to be back, Tamara. Thank you. Yeah, that week was, it really was. It was downright Soviet. Only thing getting out was, our company will get to you quick as it can. Please be patient. And pay no mind to that 1% golf tournament going on down in Greenbrier County. Wasn't like you could afford to go there in the first place. No sense in getting all head up about it. Jim, with a quote from Dr. Zhivago on the poor. Nameless numbers on forgotten lists, carelessly. Would that be carelessly or carefully, Jim? Mislaid. I'm thinking in this instance, it's probably carefully mislaid. Indeed. Indeed. So, if you want to join in, I certainly hope you will. Be good to hear from you. Are you there after all this time?
I am.
Hey, who have I got?
Sorry, a little lag on the phone there. There's just a Steady out in Christmas Valley.
Oh, my God, Steady, how are you?
I'm doing good. I mean, we're just now probably getting up into some upper 90s. It hasn't been real hot here, but I had no idea. I just didn't even know that. I mean, I knew there were some storms, and I looked at the weather, but that you guys were struggling the way you were. It just did not.
Well, don't feel bad, Steady. You weren't supposed to know.
Yeah, but the story, and then what a dreadful story passing through Alabama. It was like I was watching TV or something, listening to you. I guess you said it didn't really serve any purpose, but, alive and well. I can say you remember I went down there at Katrina, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, and I saw in Gulfport, Mississippi, Sunday morning paper that they were announcing a KKK rally on the courthouse steps. I mean, the paper wasn't just like doing promotion for KKK. That was 2007 in the wake of Katrina, Gulfport, Mississippi. Not far from Biloxi.
Oh, no. No, I know exactly where you're talking about.
And we kind of have the same thing up here, but no, I wouldn't say where people are shooting each other, but we do have migrant workers who come up here for the hay season. We have row alfalfa hay in Christmas Valley, and it's supposedly some of the world's best because of the temperature goes down at night and the volcanic and diatomaceous earth. But we get a whole crew of not only migrant farm workers, but mushroom hunters and people who come up and take advantage of the forest. I mean, legally, legitimately, to get permits, and you can take them back to wherever you come from, but many of them are, like, Spanish-speaking and of Hispanic descent, and racism is alive and well.
Yeah, it absolutely is.
It's alive and well in the Pacific Northwest, and I saw it when I was down south, and I guess it's been kind of PC'd out of the corporate environment or culture where I'm from as far as Southern California, and Spanish-speaking population is becoming a pretty dominant force down there. But what a story. What a couple of the stories, and I my heart goes out to you. I think maybe I can even do something to lighten the load a little bit here. I've been trapping gophers. Everyone's seen Caddyshack, you know.
Oh, you gophers. Not the golfers, the gophers.
Yeah, Bill Murray of the golfers. Well, you were talking about the golf tournament. They have to deal with that on the side. But, yeah, they're not as tough to catch as Bill Murray, you know, at least as easy.
Yeah, but you know what? If they did to the old white, well, you know, and this comes to somebody who used to enjoy the game of golf, but if they did to the old white after what was done to West Virginia in the past week, if they did to the old white what Bill Murray did to Bushwood, I wouldn't shed a tear.
Oh gosh, you're playing Dave Bushwood. Gosh, what a super memory there. Some people have that whole movie.
I know lots of lines.
big
hitter, the llama.
Trapping could be something that people are not really for, but there's the gophers out here living off artificial paradise, and I set a couple of personal bests. I won't go into the numbers or head counts, but we worked out from 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., and, you know, I made a little bit of money. Maybe I could send you something. That's not a promise, but I'm gonna try to do my diligence and get you guys something.
Bless your heart,
Steve. I had just thought about making some appropriations or a little bit of money, 30, 40 bucks or something, for some news that came out of London on the 4th of July, believe it or not. Gosh, I had a paper here. Here it is. Financial Times, you know, the Levergate, and I'm not sure maybe if you did catch that, where they had fixed the prime rates for the lending in the banks in England.
No.
Prime rate, if you would. You know, Financial Times is coming out saying that we need to go on formal Glass-Steagall lines, and that's been the preeminent newspaper for British Empire and Rothschilds and, you know, the whole many people who bring mountaintop removal in and coal mining profits to the forefront before general welfare. Well, the statement from London on the 4th of July, which is a significant day from London, is really... These are the top bankers and financial people who would normally go against general welfare for their own profits who are saying we need a complete separation of retail and investment banking. You know, the culture of investment banking has taken over the retail banks and they don't ever pay the profit. You see what's going on in the euro and it's almost exciting for me to share this, but I don't want to overshadow the problems that you're having in West Virginia right now.
No. That's why I opened the phone lines.
Yeah, but that reminds me of Katrina. It's just like, wow, we go on with our lives and we don't even know. But that this type of statement from London on 4th of July and from the people who are making the statement through the, you know, the media's Financial Times, they want to dump Royal Bank of Scotland, Barclays, and the debt, all the debt obligations, and work with the United States to build infrastructure projects and a separation in banking internationally. It's been blacked out of the media, probably just like West Virginia and the immigrant who had problems in Alabama who got run down and still sits in the hospital. But the word is out. This we might actually have a little bit of life at the end of this debt tunnel. Which would mean people who are coal miners, you know, what do you call them, coal thugs?
Yeah, the people like Jim Justice who, you know, make $1 billion off of blowing up our mountains, ruining our communities and poisoning our children. Yeah, coal thugs.
Yeah, gold grippers and coin graspers. Those guys are, you know, they're like, their game's over in a sense of we're moving like civilization. If we can lock down on this banking thing internationally, this news from London too on 4th of July is huge. It's bigger. I mean, I haven't done much in 6 years since I left California, but I actually went out and spent $20 on printing and started passing it out around town, you know, to get people and at least say, hey man, you know, no more welfare for the banks, essentially. And that's my message for today. You guys, everyone can call their representatives and say, hey, we need Glass-Steagall, which is a separation of retail banks. banking, which you and I put our savings in, and investment people who speculate on derivatives and basically casino-style gambling. We had that with Goldman Sachs and the whole Senate inquiry, but I don't want to take up too much time there. I want to get that word out and say, Bob, let me see if I could do something for you, $20 or something. I mean, if everybody could do five, I'm sure it would add up.
Well, there was a great deal of good done as the result of the efforts made to get the word about what was happening in West Virginia. And, well, the fact of the matter is it enabled our survival. Now the trick is to keep the horn going through an otherwise brutal month. And I'm sorry to even mention it, but it's a reality.
Well, it's special for me to actually, too. It's just weird that I got you, and you just come through quite a phase of no power or nothing. I mean, the power out. Which brings us to, okay, one other side here, like Katrina Relief. We haven't done much for them since. I mean, some media's been down there, but this potential weather, let's say the warming of the environment, the increasing of the number of storms, the intensity of the storms that are, you know, that we're experiencing, this is happening, and it can happen to any town, you know, where your listeners are at.
Oh, it's happening. It's steady. It's happening as we speak all over this country. I mean, you know, the 100-degree heat in places where there shouldn't be 100-degree heat. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah, my brother-in-law is a dairy farmer in Iowa, and I didn't know that they're, you know, here's my naivety or ignorance and stuff. That they don't irrigate, they rely on the rain. And I'm like, oh my God. And he said that the corn up there is just, the ears are stiffening, the leaves are starting to curl.
Oh, I drove past cornfield after cornfield in Alabamistan where you could see that it had just been devoured by drought.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, everybody knows what drought stricken corn looks like. You know, corn in the middle of the growing season should be tall and green and lush and beautiful with tassels and yada, 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 and ears on the stalks. And I mean, brown and burnt and tan and starving for water.
Yeah. You know, I want to just kind of expose my own naivety. Coming to the Pacific Northwest from Southern California, I've always depended on municipal water sources. I've always depended on transmission lines. I live off the grid, and I don't have a well, so I cart water. And that's my change this summer because I'm working a lot, but I use wood heat during the winter. I go up and cut wood, you know, and I went back 50 years in time. Solar panels are a really good option when you're not near the grid. Wind generation is awesome. You go to sleep and the wind.
Well, the neat thing is, you know, we can have a distributed grid that involves wind and solar.
Yes, yes.
That kind of a distributed grid keeps this kind of insanity from happening. You know, what we saw here in West Virginia in the last week is just a picture-perfect portrait. What happens when you rely on 100-year-old technology? And that's what this is. What we're going to do is we're going to build a big plant, we're going to burn a bunch of coal, and we're going to put the electricity out over a grid. And, you know, we're going to hang the wires off of poles in a state that's mostly forest. Well, what happens when a tree falls on the line? Everybody loses power. Well, can't you do something? No, that's how it works.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah. Well, it would be if it weren't true.
Well, I've come right up to that. I've seen it. Maybe not in your situation. I did certainly run into the bullheadedness and ignorance when I was down at Katrina, and the people were sitting there with their arms open, help us. And it seemed like everybody could do nothing. The only reason that Mississippi and Louisiana and Alabama came back as they did because they flocked from all over the nation to volunteer. You know, we even paid for our meals and down there and thank, Jackson County I forgot the gentleman's name there, but they afforded me the meals. I didn't even have to pay when I was down there. That was great. But you know, that can happen anywhere. But I think I need to go. I'm gonna do my part here. We still got an hour, half hour or so before I can get some money for you, and maybe I can do that. I don't even know, Bob, but I'm glad I got through. We need to develop infrastructure projects for your county, for any county, USA. We need to be aware of the.
I don't know what it's going to take, but we're after this last week. I'm gonna redouble my efforts to get solar in here, or wind, or some combination of the two. Our buddy Grant, who's also up in Oregon, put me in touch with somebody, and I've got stuff that I needed before that I didn't have and have now, information to pass along. Maybe we can make this happen, and it sure would be good.
It would. It would.
Wouldn't it be beautiful to open every program saying no mountains were harmed, no babies poisoned in the womb as a result of the transmission of this program? Wouldn't that be awesome?
Yeah, you run it off of wind and solar, and you got some battery backup, and people do amazing things out here off of the grid. They have trees, and thousands of trees that they pump water with air power, wind-generated air, compressed air systems that pump water. The pump you can make for like $20. Now, it's not going to lift at 700 feet, but most of the waters around here is about 100 feet, 120 feet, and most people do pretty good when they do that. There's a lot of opportunity. And, Bob, I want to send my heart out to you, and I actually want to spend the rest of the day see if I can do something, get a money order.
Well, bless your heart. Do not compromise your own well-being in that process. That's what I try to say to people over and over again. It is sincerely appreciated, but do not compromise your own well-being.
I won't. I just slayed a bunch of gophers, so I can probably share a little bit of the bounty.
We will gladly accept it.
Okay, now, for everybody as well as myself, could you give me an address and send that to you? Because I don't have PayPal. I'm completely...
Sure. It's also at the website under the... it's all over the website, but the mailing address is 1038. It's the Horn. Whatever you send, money order, whatever, make it payable to the Horn. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB, which stands for Personal Mailbox, 318 Beckley, West Virginia, WV. Beckley, WV, 25801.
25801 Beckley. Could you spell that for me one more time?
Yeah, Beckley.
D as in Bravo?
Yep, Bravo.
Exactly. Okay, Bob, hi to Agnes, hi to your family, hi to the Horn family, all the listeners, I love you, and I'm going to do my part over here, see if I can.
Well, it's awful good to hear from you, Steady. You take care, and don't be a stranger.
I will. I won't be a stranger, and I will take care. Thank you, Bob.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Calling from Christmas Valley, Oregon. That's our old pal and one of our oldest pals. Steady. We've got about 32 minutes remaining in the program. Well, call it 30. If you want to get in, participate in the conversation, you are more than welcome to do so. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, HEADON. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. And also, I might note, if I can, daggum it. I hate it when this happens. Yeah, you find out more and more how many weird things happened when everything went down. For some reason or another, the production computer does not wish any longer to connect to the interweb tubes. So that could be problematic somewhere down the road. Probably has to be addressed. What a giant annoyance. So that's why I'm not in the chat room right now. The computer, while I was talking with Steady, spontaneously decided to disconnect, shut down, and did so right as I was starting Skype, because I got a reminder from our buddy Vince not to forget that because some of the stuff is easy to forget. Not forget that we're also connecting via Skype now, which you would be if the computer had an internet connection right now, which it doesn't. Did we get hit by that weirdo virus? I don't know. But yeah, that's for after the program. Because it's not the never a dull moment department. It's the never a dull moment lifestyle. Just is. So again, the time for conversation. If you want to jump in, I'm kind of. Well, the fact of the matter is I'm in a bind because, the computer shut down with all my tabs open, all my stories. Luckily for us all, I have a pretty decent memory. And I had another one of those stories about, compare and contrast, only this was a whole lot more compare. And it has to do with... it has to do with a little something we heard coming up the road. We had verged over near, we were coming up the west side of Alabama, and we'd verged over near the border of Mississippi Stand. And apparently, and you've heard Jim mention the blithering idiot who... babbles away for the sake of the right wing in Beckley, who shall remain nameless. It is a little bit amazing that he's managed to get behind the microphone for all these years with absolutely no talent whatsoever, but yeah, that's right wingers. You don't have to have talent. You did see the story, I trust, of the do you remember the Bill Maher episode from a couple of weeks ago where he named that one kid from a couple of years ago who gave the stirring right wing speech and was the darling of the Tea Party and right-wing circuit for a while and conservative CPAC and all of that crap. It turns out, and he was, of course, from Georgia Stan. Turns out he's 17 years old and getting ready to go off to college and still a really smart kid. But he actually, insofar as he had a brain. And the worst thing that can happen to zombie conservatism is for somebody to have it and not have it eaten. Because at some point along the road of life, he had a bit of an epiphany, I guess, and realized he was no longer a right winger. That so-called social conservatism that hates people for whom they love is no way to go through life. And so, on the heels of having been re-mentioned by Bill Maher, he said, "Hey, listen, I'm not that guy anymore. I got well. I got sane. I quit letting hate dominate my life." And the kid has been absolutely pilloried by the right wing for daring to suggest what we all know, that right-wingery is just a hateful conglomeration of ignorance, bigotry, fear. Did I mention hate? Yeah. But no, we were traveling within radio signal distance of some little station in Mississippi Stan. It was the middle of the day. And some guy, and as we were listening, I was beginning to make animal noises. Agnes worries when that happens, especially when we're, howling up the road and I'm the guy behind the wheel and hooting and hollering at the same time, listening to this clown. And so Agnes grabbed the little notebook and gave me that look and said, "Bob, you just drive. I'll make notes. You can talk about it later." Because at this point I'd begun to vibrate. I was going, "Give out the number. Give out the call-in number. Come on, give the phone number.
Oh, come on, Mushmouth. Give the phone number. I want to play. Agnes knows it's getting bad when that happens. The last time she heard, saw me go through that was listening to the truck driver call in the American Family Radio Network as we were traversing Indiana to complain about how I make a good living and everything, but I worry about the morals. I drive truckloads of condoms, brother. And I really was. I was going to pull over for that one, too, to the chorused cries of, "Oh, come on, Dad!" from the back of the vehicle. I deliver truckloads of things that keep the precious little fetuses from becoming little fetuses, and I sure hope Jesus can forgive me. It really happened. Just like this really happened. Goober, we'll call him Goober, instead of something more crass or coarse. No. Pinhead. Let's go for Pinhead. No, Jackass. Jackass. So Jackass is babbling on about the overreaching of the federal government. You know what the federal government done? Federal government done proposed a rule says as to how all public swimming pools has to be accessible to the handicapped. And now they even coming up, and I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. Because this guy doesn't have enough creativity. He's a right winger. He doesn't have enough creativity to actually come up with any of this stuff on his own. He just opens the microphone and starts reading the right wing talking points of the day or whatever he found on Drudge or World and the Wingnut Daily or over at Free Republic or any of those other weird places. Or, you know, maybe he got it from one of the leaderless, sort of headless zombies of the Breitbart Brigade.